The Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Amen. To have Gary here, and he's going to do his presentation. Drew's going to be helping with the clicker over there, going to turn the lights down. Let's welcome Gary.
Thank you, Gary.
Hi, everybody. I'm Gary. I'm an alcoholic. It's such a pleasure to be here. It's such a privilege. My sobriety date is August 25th, 1997, which makes me rather junior as with regards to some of the people presenting here. It also says that I'm in the slow group. I came in when I was 49 years old. I'm 75 now with about 26 years. But I'm also, in terms of qualifications, basically, I consider myself to be one of the amateurs, an amateur that the late Ernest Kirst asked for, people that just decided to have time to pursue a particular subject and try to bring. There's so much AA history. There are so many threads. There's so many different parts that all put this miracle land together for us. And this happens to be one of them. But before I get started, I would like my wife to stand. Mary? Okay, thanks. Stay. All right. This is a we program in every way, shape, and form. Would you believe it or not, there are five people that are in this room right now that contributed to the manuscript that is behind the Bobby book. And, you know, and I can't be express how grateful I am. And of course, it's my wife, Mary, is the one that had to put up with my various trips up to the GSO. But she's also the one that was part of the discovery of the treasure that literally was discovered in May of 2020 when the wealth that what I would literally say is a treasure chest came from Vermont, and much of what you'll be seeing is not at the GSO. It's not at the Stepping Stones. This comes from a private collection that happens to be in Vermont, and it comes from the grandchildren of Bobby. Okay, and how that came about is I don't have time to go into that. So, Drew, Bobby was the national secretary from March 2 of 1942 and June of 13 of 1949. Now, when you look at the book that came out, The Great Responsibility, you on page 8, you have Ruth Hawk. There's the picture with Bill. And on page 10, you have Nell Wing. But what you also, she was hired in 1997. She became Bill's secretary in 1950. Does it ever occur to anyone who was the person that connected the two of them? That's Bobby. Bobby's the one that is there before there are traditions. Bobby is on the front lines. Bobby is protecting Bill and has any number of activities and is also the only alcoholic that is working at what was called the Alcoholic Foundation until mid-1946. Go. Now, Bobby was born in 1903. She graduated from an exclusive Knox school in Tarrytown, New York, in 1919. She enrolled in Columbia University, but her desire to be an actress and also a dancer took over that responsibility. And these are pictures. They're not dated, so we can't say exactly when, but this is part of the treasure chest that came from Vermont. These are undated promotional pictures of Bobby, but you can see she is very attractive. Do it. All right. Now, actually, these are probably out of sequence. The pictures to the right were probably taken before the pictures to the left. The pictures to the right is obviously she's been trained in doing ballet. I can't say exactly what years they were. But then also her acting career is to the left. It's also her dancing career as well. Go. All right. And these are, again, more promotional pictures that you can see in every way, shape, and form She is in every way a pleasure to look at. Go. All right. Now, Margaret Roberts and Donald Sawyer. Now, Donald Sawyer might not mean a whole lot to you, but a name that means a good deal to most, Arthur Murray. Donald Sawyer was in every way, shape, and form a colleague of Arthur Murray. And, you know, I guess today, in today's, we had Dancing with the Stars. Well, Bobby was dancing for royalty. She danced for four different kings and four different countries to kings and queens in Europe. And that, along with Donald. So she was an extremely successful, and that was all happening before she was 22 years old. Go. All right, now, you know, this is her marriage to Norman Berger. When I started off, incidentally, in terms of the research, I didn't even know whether or not Berger was a maiden name or a married name. It turns out to be a married name. Her maiden name was Roberts, and I swear, they have her standing on some sort of a step ladder or something, and it looks like she's 15 feet tall to the right. But she was having... she was enjoying herself immensely, and she sort of settled for a marriage. There's Mr. and Mrs. Norman Berger to the left, and very quickly in 1927 and 1928, she had her two daughters. Hit it, all right. But unfortunately, and this is one of the turning points in her life. Her husband dies in February of 1929, leaving her with two children, and the obit is to the left. And, of course, that was, for her, was just an absolute devastating, because here she ends up giving up her dancing career for a marriage that lasted 3.5 years, and then she has two kids, and she has that as a responsibility. Now, her marriage is to Irwin Shep Spink, and that marriage takes place in September 23 of 1932. Shep pursued her for some time. They seemed to fight. At that time, Bobby was a dance instructor for Arthur Murray. This is most likely where the two of them met, even though we don't know that for sure. Shep was employed by Tide of Life Publication in Advertising. He was a flyer for Time Life. He moved them to Detroit and then to Cleveland. That could have been Siberia, as far as Bobby was concerned. She was in every way, shape, and form a creature of New York, Manhattan. That's where she belonged. You were a little quick. Yeah. So, again, that could have been her solution. This is when she starts to drink. Shep would not come back home at night. She started to suspect whether or not he was cheating her. It's at the same time in advertising. A lot of people end up working late into the evening, so she would make some drinks for her husband. The husband wouldn't come home, and she'd drink them. All right. By 1936, Shep refused to be embarrassed by Bobby's drinking, and he tried to discipline her. Go. Okay. After a 10-day alcoholic binge when she ran away from her husband and children, her father and husband found her, quote-unquote, in the South. I have no idea where that was. They decided to have her hospitalized, and she was in Doctor's Hospital in Manhattan in February of 1936. She's released roughly a month later. Her husband thought that brought the children to Dobbs Ferry, which is where her parents lived and where she had grown up, and was a rather affluent household. So he and Bobby go on vacation to Daytona, and she just starts drinking again. But her drinking was being treated as a mental illness. So meanwhile, Shep is dining with Henry Luce, which was considered to be in the 30s, probably one of the most influential men in the country. So he was attracted to very powerful men. And Henry Luce, one of the most influential private citizens in America in his day. And so in 1924, she's dancing for kings and queens of Europe. In 1936, she's being spanked by her second husband for being a drunk. Okay, and that was actually chronicled in a 1943 newspaper article, which is more or less, when you read the newspaper article, it's really a biography of Bobby. It was in the three-week publication, again on the American Weekly, and it was all about her. They called her Enid in the biography, but in every way, shape, and form, there she was getting spanked. Go. All right. So, it always amazes me what people called things then versus what they are now. The Hartford Retreat for the Insane is the second asylum that she went to in 1936. It's called the Institute for Living now, and incidentally, it is amazing. If anybody knows Frederick Law Olmsted, he's the person that designed Central Park and so on. With what they had available back at that time, if you were going to have a place like that, they always wanted immaculate grounds so they could have serene surroundings at such a place. And Frederick Law Olmsted actually did the landscaping for this place. So anyway, she's in there for a few months. It featured programs of re-education, typing, crafts, PE, gardening, homemaking. You can see that. And what does that have to do with alcoholism? Nothing, as I can tell. But again, we were treating people, in this particular case, as if alcoholism was a mental illness. And she got out of there, and she almost relapsed almost immediately. Do it. Okay, now, life at Bloomingdale's, this is the third hospital she was in 1936. Now, we don't really know what was going on with her specifically. She never wrote about it. But what we do have is what happened when a successor to her, Lillian Roth, it should be Lillian Roth, I believe. That's a typo up on the top. I Cried Tomorrow, which came out in 1954, but there's a paragraph in her biography which does give an explanation of what it would have been like in Bloomingdale's, which rarely takes alcoholics, the regular mental patients. I had been without alcohol since my arrival. This is again in 1954. The peraldehyde, vitamin injections, and other medication helped me bide me over. A community therapeutic shower followed breakfast. To relax us, we sat in line, naked but for a sheet, while nurses sprayed us with hot water, then tepid, then ice water needles. Gym and dancing followed. After a fresh air, we were taken to mental therapy room, some painted. Again, you can read the rest. What does this have to do with alcoholism? But that was the way alcoholics were being treated back then. I don't know. I have no idea why they didn't try Towns Hospital, but that was the choice of how they decided that where Bobby should go. Christmas was spent with her husband, Shep, and children at her parents' home. He, however, at that Christmas, nice Christmas present, he announced that he wanted a divorce. Yeah. Bobby left Bloomingdale's on January 2nd, 1937. She was there actually voluntarily on her own nickel. And it was a possible suicide attempt in March. Divorce finalized in June. Shep was married a third time in Ohio. And actually, reading behind the lines, there are looking at Ancestry.com, he immediately had two children. And it's possible that Bobby didn't want children by him. That might have had something to do with the divorce. Go. All right. Now, Stamford Hall, this largest private sanitarium in New England doesn't exist anymore, but it gives you the atmosphere, again, of the serene grounds that happen to be for rest and relaxation are important factors. Now, this is just one of the sanitariums she was in. We discovered this one by the letters that her children were writing her while she was there. That's what pointed us to that she was actually, and it's very likely that she was at Stamford Hall when she first got an idea of Alcoholics Anonymous. Bobby's encounter with Marty Mann, and this is out of the Mrs. Marty Mann that Nancy was mentioning earlier today, Marty took one look at the patient, that was Bobby, and decided she wouldn't spend any effort on her. Didn't have one chance in a million. Marty was wrong. The woman did make it. Her name was Bobby, misspelled. That's very common. Bobby eventually became the secretary of AA's General Service Office, and her name was known to AAs over the world. And that was a very practical example for Marty then, that she could not tell who would get sober and who can. And that is, for me, is one of the things that continues on to this day. Go. All right. Now, Bobby's letter to Lois, this is dated March 14th of 1940. And this was transposed. This is one of the 190 letters that I collected and that became part of the manuscript that of mind you, this is something that I had to dictate when I was in at the GSO, because you're not allowed to copy anything. You're not allowed to photograph anything. If you want to do what I did, you've got to go up there and you've got to dictate it. And then you've got to come back and transcribe it. I did that for over 1,000 of her letters. But incidentally, there's probably 4,000 of her letters that have never been touched by anybody. And that I will tell you then, that for me, this is a tremendous curiosity. What have I missed? There's a lot up there. There's a lot of stories there that haven't been discovered yet. So we're really looking at something that is a project in motion and not by any means completed. My dear Lois, your name has been given to me. May I please attend your meeting on Tuesday at Steinway Hall? I forgot to ask Dr. Allen what time I would hope to incoming a permanent member if I qualify. Okay. All right, go. All right. Now, mid-March. Well, she did have a little startup problem here. She got her reckless driving charge, and this was actually not civil, it was criminal. It's because she ran off the road and hit somebody. I don't think they, after also damaging their car. So this was a civil matter, but it's the date of it is March 30th. She claimed a March 30 or a March sobriety date. That might be slightly questionable under when you came across this. Go. All right, Bobby did get sober, and the first documented activity Bobby sober involved Bill and her 12-stepping Bobby's boyfriend, Mac, by driving him to High Watch Farm in Kent, Connecticut. That was when Bill and Bobby did that as a team together. Bobby had a car, and many times Bill and Lois seemed to often lack transportation. They were often driven places rather than drive themselves. The French Commission and Bobby's in Lois's diary has Bobby, again, the misspelling, part of a group from High Watch Farm that went dancing on Saturday night, July 13th, 1940. The next day, Lois credited Bobby getting dinner for the group. Go. Okay, and then activities at High Watch Farm and Dobbs Ferry. Bill and Lois were driven to High Watch Farm by her. Ebby was supposed to come driving, but he was drunk. No mention of, there's no mention of Bobby yet. The following Friday, Bill, Mac, and Lois took the subway to meet Bobby and Dick Stanley from Ohio. Bobby drove them all to her home where they had dinner. Then she drove them to High Watch Farm where they spent the weekend. On Saturday, August 17th, Bill and Lois took the subway, were picked up by Bobby, and they together spent the weekend with Mac at Dobbs Ferry at Bobby's parents'. That's one of the 50 or so addresses that Lois and Bill had during that two-year period before they ended up at Stepping Stones. Do it. All right. And this is, some people think that this was actually her sobriety date. I don't think so. But Mac went crazy and was supposedly with another woman and was drinking, and she lost her. She tried to go to his apartment. And Bill comes to the rescue, and it's documented that he did give her sedatives to settle her down. He did take the keys to her car, and he did not come home that evening. By October 10th, however, all seems forgiven. While Bill left her an overnight visit to Philadelphia, Lois had dinner at Bobby and Mac before attending the AA meeting at the 24th Street Clubhouse. Mac was the last about into early 1942, and then no one had ever heard of him again. Go. Now, again, when we have these pictures, they're not dated. This is just taking a guess that she vacationed in Connecticut and New Hampshire and for some years continued to be a regular visitor to High Watch Farm. Go. Now, in 1941, Bobby became secretary of the 24th Street Clubhouse, which was a paid position. Dick, the car smasher, warned her about overdoing. And, you know, and I want you to picture her. What's she been trained to do? A dancer. What if this is a dancer on stage? And she was every much on focus as an individual. That was really her only training, to be up on stage or performing. And I think that had a lot to do with her overdoing. And also, incidentally, the woman was tested in 1945 as a near genius. She was a lot smarter than most of the people that she ended up with. And so part of her difficulty, I think, in listening to other people sometimes is she would test a great deal smarter than they were. She was very involved in the Saturday Evening Post article written by Jack Alexander, which we've seen a lot of. It was of interest that Lois, on page 31 in the first printing of a book, Lois Remembers. Lois remembered, Lois actually made a mistake. She mistook when Ruth Hawk got married, which was February 28, 1942. And so Lois wrote Ruth Hawk had left to be married to a member from Ohio, which is where she did move to. So Bobby B., the new secretary, and I worked out a plan to use volunteers to help answer all the inquiries that would flood in. Now, that most likely, a lot of the letters were coming into both the 24th Street Clubhouse and also 30 Vesey Street, which is where Ruth Hawk was. So they were probably answering from both places, but it just shows that sometimes with good intentions, no matter how good it is, that sometimes the memory isn't exactly right. That has been corrected in later editions of Lois Remembers. And I'm amused. I'm also an Al-Anon, and many times Al-Anon chooses to use the Serenity Prayer. Now, this is, I don't know the answer to this, but when the prayer originally showed up by Jack Carney and brought that newspaper article in which they saw the four lines, it didn't have a title. So for a lot of times, it was known as the AA prayer. I do not know within AA it actually got titled the Serenity Prayer. I don't know how that happened, but for a while, Bobby was distributing along Ruth literally what was called the AA prayer. I wonder what. I'm a good Al-Anon, but I will say I don't know whether or not it would be as popular if the Al-Anons knew it was once the AA prayer. Go. Now, you know, and I got this picture from Drew. This is the only picture of Bobby and Ruth Hawk. And they remained good friends after Ruth moved to Cleveland, Ohio. I believe it's Bobby that's all the way bent over, and it's Ruth that's behind her. And we don't know where this picture came from, but I thank Drew for it. Go. Now, Bobby becomes national secretary on March 2nd of 1942. And this is out of Alcoholics Anonymous, Comes of Age. Ruth was replaced by Bobby B., who became AA's National Secretary number 2. Bobby's complete loyalty and devotion and her unbelievable energy and capacity for hard work were priceless helps during the confused and hazardous years which now lay ahead of us. Around March of 1942, Bill tried to join the Army. He flunked the physical. And I swear, that is something that we should all celebrate. Okay, because if Bill had disappeared, I don't know what in the heck would have happened to the, again, it's not the GSO back then, it was the Alcoholic Foundation until 1954. But Bobby wrote that he was brokenhearted, and this is just as a qualification in Bobby's writing back then that they had 2,050 communities that at last year, but they were growing to 6,000 in 175 localities. As far as I'm concerned, take those numbers with a grain of salt. And then she says, we've answered 8,000 requests to it. Okay, now, Bobby writing about her new job, it's a wonderful feeling to have to know that there were so many friends all over the country assisting and supporting our great program. Personally, I just love my job. Can't imagine any work that can give more happiness. And then it gets curious, and you know, because she's writing as a colleague here, not a secretary. Very shortly, Bill W. and I are going to set down some answers to the questions you wrote in group activities and organizations. We hope to have the booklet I mentioned to you as well on the way. Nothing ever became that we know of at that time from this booklet. I'll do what I can to get whatever, but when we come up with the stories that are behind the traditions, we can't be exactly sure when some of that background information was assembled, who actually wrote the or what events actually occurred, but it would be likely that Bobby was integrally involved with the creation of the traditions, because after all, she was on the receiving end of whatever mail that was coming in first. She was the one that would open it. She was the one that was protecting Bill. She was the one that was trying to protect Bill from us to overwhelming him with things, because there was always more than Bill could do. It's difficult to tell. Again, and incidentally, I'll tell you, from the letters that I've seen, we are not nice people without the traditions, okay? I mean, he did not come up with the traditions because he had nothing better to do. Okay, just simply because it's the practical experience that of what was coming to us when people didn't know any better. Go. I just thought this would be of interest. This is September 24th of 1992. This is from her big book and a tribute to tribute from Bill to. And this, I understand, was just, there's a fellow here, I won't break his anonymity, but he was involved in switching, I guess he did some trades or so forth, but this picture of Dr. Bob, you can't tell in this picture, but in the lower, I believe it's the lower right-hand corner, that's Dr. Bob signing a salutation to Bobby, and that went for a heavy-duty chunk of change. And when it went up for sale, go. And again, it's you got to remember that AA was a different place back then. And of course, this is the beginning of World War II. AA's pledge for national defense and self-preservation, and you can read some of the things that we as Alcoholics Anonymous members, physically, mentally, spiritually, I will go about my business with a clear eye. And I will help build my town as a wholesome, balanced community, because if the communities are sound, America will be sound. I will work for unity among our people and oppose efforts to create hatred based on race, creed, or color. Not bad for 1942. I will keep my faith in myself and my country and my God. I think that was the original was in red, white, and blue. That comes out of that. The big newspaper published by the folders of newspapers, and that it was black and white. Go. All right. Now, also among Bobby, what Bobby was doing is making a plan for AAs in the armed services. And so as of a bulletin in May 15th in 1942, she says, "We all know many of our members are now in the service of the United States, and she wants to be able to track them all." And when somebody goes to a new fort or new address and so forth, she wants to be able to have the knowledge of when that person, the military man, contacts her. She can say, oh, you've got this guy and this guy wherever you happen to be. So she's trying to track that, by and large, originally much by herself. By the time the first grapevine was published in June of 1944, the list of military AAs had grown to 300 members, and that responsibility was turned over to the grapevine after that. How to sponsor a country, Australia. A lot of people in this country never knew who Bobby was, but I will tell you that people in Australia were way ahead of us. And the reason why is they came up, they have their version of a book. It's called One to Another. It's their version of Alcoholics Anonymous Comes of Age. And the reason is that Bobby basically sponsored Australia. And if you read what is up there, this is literally how well Bobby could mimic what Bill would have written had he had the opportunities. Our members come from all walks of life. Our spiritual concepts are broad. Our members are Catholics, Protestants, and Jews, and most nationalities are remember. In round figures, we believe that we have about one woman member to every seven men. Alcoholism is no respecter of race, color, creed, or sex, and may become alcoholic, but all can recover if they wish, and you can read the rest of it. But down at the bottom, Bill W., who wrote the text of the book Alcoholics Anonymous, and I are now editing a compilation of group experiences over the past 5 years. This may be out this summer. Never was. But again, that is, at least at that time, it's suggesting that they were working together on a project, and sometimes this work was after hours. It is not usual to find Bobby in the newspaper, but this is an example that she was in the Chicago Tribune in June 9th of 1943. How to gather more on, this is her refolding in the newspaper article, how to gather more unfortunate sisters into the fold was explained last night in a meeting in the loop of 400 members, including perhaps 100 women, by Miss Margaret Rowe. Okay, incidentally, Bill was Bill Doe in this newspaper article. Women, Miss Rowe said, are more difficult to convince because they have stronger inhibitions and wear a mask of reserve that is hard to penetrate, even when the need for rehabilitation is the greatest. Unlike men, they do not care to talk about their bad habits. I was very surprised to find this originally, but it's, in all honesty, probably isn't that surprising. When you read the foreword of the first edition, there are those words, "We are too few at present to handle the overwhelming number of personal appeals." That's not a surprise to anybody that reads the big book, but it was a surprise that up at least October 20th in 1943, AA's headquarters phone number was unlisted. They were afraid of being literally overwhelmed by incoming phone calls. So as a result, if you can picture that there wasn't the infrastructure, except in maybe Chicago and Cleveland, that we take for granted today. So the only way you were going to get a hold of New York AA was through the letters, and that's how important those letters were. At the same time, that's why they are literally a roadmap, many of which we have never seen as a fellowship, towards what was really going on back then. And again, I look forward to the day when we can reveal and see more of that. Bobby was the essential day-to-day conduit of communication for almost all of Alcoholics Anonymous, except, as I said, for Cleveland and Chicago. And until at least, again, early 1946, Bobby was the only headquarters staff member that was also an alcoholic. AA's cooperation with World War II. This is, again, pre-traditions, but there was a meeting in Richmond, California, that openly was Alcoholics Anonymous and openly was trying to keep people sober to help with the war effort, and the effort was reported to have saved 44 man years. At DuPont, it was a little bit different. They kept the AA discreet, but anybody had an alcohol problem ended up going to this employee who was also an AA member. And AA reprinted 1,000 copies of Two Employers with the purpose of assisting the war effort. These were, I have a copy now, but they were to be distributed to defense plants. Okay. And here we start. This is the first letter that came directly from the treasure chest in Vermont, and it's Spook Night. And this is a letter from Bill to Bobby. And it chronicles an encounter with the Powers. And some people, this is Pa Powers, who was very much of a skeptic. This is the father of Tom Powers, that was a fellow that assisted Bill Wilson with the 12 and 12. And the father was a big skeptic and so forth. And Lois was present at this as well. And he... ends up being amazed. He sat there for an hour describing this event's appearance in great detail, every motion they made, some children who sat on his lap, and so forth. And as cautious as Lois is, she was pretty convinced a long table was prepared for it. Now, it's unfortunate that these things are all the originals are written in his handwriting. And sometimes it's, you know, Mary and I had, we tried our level-headed best to translate or decipher some of this, but sometimes it was just not possible. All except before the old man, after he had described it, I was told it was an effort to reproduce the Lord's Supper and so on. But it was, this is, and I think there's going to be a book coming out next year that will have a lot more to do with the events of spooks and seances at Stepping Stones, which also was taking place at Dr. Bob's. Go. And here's written in Bill's own handwriting on the train to headquarters on August 13th in 1943. And I will tell you that this is the start of revealing a Bill Wilson personally in a manner in which I hadn't seen before. But again, and you know, the only thing that's wrong with the exhibit on the right, it should be yellow, and unfortunately, the way I copy it ended up in black and white. But this is Bill writing to Bobby. Nothing can be such a break on the joy of living as to have one around in a black mood whose paw covers everything in reach, and especially with you so very tired. It was really a mean exhibition of childishness for which I am very sorry. Doubly so, for I did not think I could be so self-centered. And, as I'm sure you know, my better self would rather be concerned with making you content, joyful, and secure. I wish I might be endowed with the words to tell you just how deeply and affectionately I regard you as Bobby, my dear partner of our fabulous enterprise, of the sheer joy of being with you and working together in rapport, of these glimpses of that incredible future which I pray that we may both contribute with what the master expects. Now, you've got to remember, when you're looking at this, is that at this time, Lois was so happy to be at Stepping Stones. She didn't have a whole lot of use for any kind of movement or anything else or anything that had 12. Bobby, at that time, was the alcoholic that was available and understood. And that's what these letters actually, Bill could really write his emotions to Bobby. And unfortunately, we have no responses from Bobby to Bill directly. Well, we have a few, but we don't have the correspondence that was going on. And you can speculate on why that's the case. I try not to make decisions or make descriptions about things that I don't know, but that's nevertheless is what's been found so far. Bill's West Coast discovery. So Bill and Lois left for their first West Coast trip on October 24th, 1943. This letter was written by Bill to Bobby from San Francisco. And I'm just going to read part because time's short. How very happy your grand letters make me. How you find time is a mystery. I'm getting really concerned about the lack of help down there, meaning back at the foundation. Then I'll go, this speech-making of mine is a pleasant luxury for people here, but no necessity, thank heaven. It is, on the contrary, you who is needed. More and more I see what you mean to them, so they tell me. Now, he goes to California, and wherever he goes, he finds that the meetings are almost identical. How did that happen? Bobby. It was Bobby that's in contact with these people and giving them an idea of what was happening elsewhere. She was not an originator of anything. What she was actually doing is receiving information of what was going on in the field and then transmitting it to anybody who wanted it. It was never her intent to ever make a decision about anything. It was only that she was supposed to be a conduit and a communicator. Go. Now, here's a rare newspaper quote by Bobby. And this was a trip that she did with Bill. I don't know whether or not Lois was along, but that's possible. But this trip was the last out-of-state trip Bill and Bobby took together, and that, again, was March 1944. And again, for what reason this turned out to be the last trip so early in their relationship is, again, just speculation. But alcoholics meet to describe aid. And here you go with a violation of anonymity, Miss Bobby Berger. That's wrong. They gave her last names, and she was Mrs. All right, but that's what we have when we end up in the newspapers and allowing people to write about us that really don't know about us. And she's quoted as having the problems a little bit more difficult for women. And that's enough of that. Go. All right. Now, here's Bobby calming the rumors about Bill's health. It is, if you take the Mel Barger book, and it's either, I can't remember, which of the, at the moment, but it is, there's a letter in there in the Mel Barger book in which he admits to being depressed for 8 of the years between 1943 and 1955. Okay, so this the fact that he was depressed by his own words is indisputable. Well, okay, so he withdraws and sometimes isn't even he's entirely out of touch. And what does Bobby do? She offends him. Bill is being forced into taking a vacation. It's a vacation, okay? Then July 31st, he's been away from the office for over a month. August 15th, the doctors asked Bill not to receive any so-called business mail. So I'm holding your letter until he returns. I'm sure you will understand and agree that we must think Bill's health first. So long, he thought, only of us, September 1. Rumors and even facts do grow on our intangible grapevine. Bill has not had a breakdown. He has not gone into any hospital. Bill is just plain pooed out after his 10 concentrated years helping other people get well. And Merry Christmas. This is a 1944 greeting. I actually took this out of a Cleveland bulletin. But the words that are in the Christmas tree there are Bill's. And we're not going to read them, but what the essential part of this, Merry Christmas to you all from the trustees, from Bobby, and from Lois and me, Bill Wilson. I ask you, how in the world, when she had that much esteem to be included with the trustees, Bill and Lois, could we have ever forgotten her? Go. And in the new wartime edition of the book, which turns out to be the 8th printing of the first edition, because of the acute shortage of book paper, we have repeatedly, on the order of the War Production Board, reduced the weight of the paper used in the book, Alcoholics Anonymous. That's February 12th of 1945. So she managed that in that, you know, the smaller big book. And they had to do that because, much to my surprise, paper was rationed too. And so they were incidentally rationed by the ton. So you could make more books out of a ton of big books, a ton of paper, if you shrank the book. Go. Bobby in the May 1945 grapevine. And I'm just going to jump. Bobby B., 5 years in AA, though Bobby works and how. So they know how hard she works. Here in Manhattan, she is perhaps better known to the thousands with whom she corresponds all over the country. And that is another reason why, for in my opinion anyway, is that the people in New York themselves, they had no idea what she was doing in many regards. It was the people out in the field that were receiving her mail. Those were the people that knew her. Those were the people that depended on her. But the people in New York were not receiving the kind of communication that she was making to either people in domestically or internationally. So, more of Bobby's role of protecting Bill from the fellowship, because this is now his depression's going on for as much as his second year. Bill is taking a long leave of active work in this office due to his health. For a year now, he's been trying to come in part-time, but finds it hard to stick to his schedule. Once in the office, things pile up. The next thing we know, he snowed under again. May 15th of 45, doctors advised Bill not to do any traveling or group visiting for some time to come. And then December 18th, 1945, perhaps you have not heard that the doctors took Bill away from active work about a year and a half ago, and he seldom comes into the office. That means Bobby was running the show, the office, except when maybe a trustee got involved or she had to ask a question of someone that was in a position of authority. Do it. Okay. And this is a letter that was written to Leonard Harrison by Bill, May 2nd, 1945. At the last meeting of the foundation, there was a discussion of the possibility that I might retire, that's Bill, from active participation in the Central Office and Works Publishing. The Central Office, under the guidance of the trustees, me and two excellent national secretaries, have been the keystone of the arch under which thousands of alcoholics have found their way to a new life. If I should suddenly pass out of the picture, there would be no one left in all AA except Bobby B. Should she leave, we would be in a serious predicament. The whole continuity of the Central Office is still depending upon the good health and continued attention of Mrs. B. and me. It is the National Secretary who actually personifies the Alcoholic Foundation, which was, again, that name was for the GSO. Few have contributed more to our success than Ruth Hawk and Margaret B. May their kind continue as National Secretaries forever. And this is continuing on with the fact that he might retire. For the past year and a half, I have made few decisions, nor have been much at the Central Office. I'm happy to say that Mrs. B., occasionally consulting the trustees on detail side of the office, has done an excellent job. She has operated Works Publishing, Inc., recently turning out a large new edition of books without any assistance from me whatsoever. Two or three new public relations matters come across her desk each week, many of them requiring an intimate knowledge of the personalities in the groups as well as a thorough understanding of our public relations policies. I have encouraged her to make these decisions herself, excepting upon issues involving some new or large problem. She has done very well indeed. We might be faced any time with the problem of finding a new national secretary. Someone would have to train the new secretary. That would be about a two-year job, assuming we were lucky enough to find the right one. Consequently, it seems of prime importance that we assure thoroughly qualified understudy as soon as possible. Go. That incidentally turned out to be Charlotte Lappin, who was soon to become her assistant. And this picture is actually on, Paul has it. I just clipped it, but this is one of the rare pictures of Bobby that was on the internet. I believe there were only three, which is another reason why she was so hard to identify. Do it. Okay, now, this is the empty jug. This is out of Chattanooga. This is some fellow that he got sober after some false starts on July 18th, 1944. He founded an AA newspaper on September 1944 in Chattanooga, Tennessee, when he had 6 weeks of sobriety. What could possibly go wrong with that? Seriously offended when Bill W. declared the Grapevine to be an official magazine of AA in 1945. No evidence that Carl ever had a sponsor. Okay, Bobby repeatedly encouraged Carl to practice anonymity in his newspaper, but he ignored their recommendations. So often advised Carl's home group, despite Bobby's repeated attempts, Carl simply disregarded her. That led to Bill getting involved. Bill wrote a kind letter, which I can't include. I don't have time for it. But then he wrote a blistering letter to Carl to try to get his attention. But Carl ignored that as well. Go. This, and here we go with, again, and this is quote-unquote an AA newspaper. Yes, we know these things, and if we had a drink, too many drinks and too many drinks many times, we would know what would happen beforehand. But teenage boys and girls do not know these things, and they are not told them by liquored advertising or the various mediums of expressions such as motion pictures, radio, magazines, and which have various. So he's condemning both the liquor industry and also Hollywood. Go. And here on March of 1946, this is just before the traditions come out. He knows something is going on, or so he thinks. Rumors, we place little credence in the rumor that the 12 steps are being rewritten in New York, we do place credence in the rumor that New York is preparing a manual for group organization, and if they do this, you can trace it to the non-alcoholic influence in the foundation. I don't know what he was talking about. I don't know where he's getting this stuff. Some people are nuts in the subject of organization, but such a manual will not bother anybody. We have as many walking organization manuals now as there are members, and a few printed tomes will just make us all screwier and happier. Do it. Okay, now here's where he goes really overboard. Okay, an open letter to subscriber members of AA complained about harassment from New York. That was Bobby and Bill trying to tone him down. He insisted that atheists are fools and idiots. Wished to machine gun liquor company executives that he compared to a nest of snakes that wanted to take over the country, turning people into human derelicts. Okay, wrote AA headquarters, thought Manhattan the home. He thought that Bill and Bobby thought that the Garden of Eden and the throne of God were in Manhattan. And then he accused Hollywood movie executives of murder. Good grief. How about some tradition 6? How about some tradition 10 when you're going, I mean, boy, did we need them. Go. Unfortunately for him, he fell over dead in 1942. Now, he may have relapsed. Sometimes when people relapsed and died, some people, when they did decide to end it all, out of kindness, relatives, and so forth, masqueraded as a natural death. But as it turns out, that ends the story, and is who knows how that story would have ended otherwise. Go. Now, Bill's February 27th, 1946 letter to Bobby, and I think this epitomizes what Bill was going through again prior to the traditions being written. Yesterday's experience in town has convinced me that I shall have to hasten my parting with our national activities. It was so alarmingly severe that I dare not ride anymore. Worse than the times I left for Florida 2 years ago. Worse because 100 such experiences have worn any lingering hope that I shall ever be better under the present conditions. The power of my obsession has finally dispelled the illusion that it could ever basically improve as things are now. I need to make a decision like yours of 2 years ago. I have no idea what that decision was. You had to see clearly what was impossible for you. You then declared it, acted upon it, and stuck to your course without a hair's breadth of deviation. All last year, I wanted 1,000 times to make a decision, but I could not. I would hope something might turn up, a remedy, diversion, or maybe a fresh experience that would bring release. This is more of the same letter. I didn't want to throw the full burden of our national affairs on you and the others. I could not leave unfinished tasks undone for whose completion I felt terribly responsible. So I continued my misleading course without a rudder. And for these same reasons, I'm still on that same course, yawing badly, healing over dangerously. Shall I keep on like this? And if so, for what good end? And with what? The resources stay, the ship on this course seem to be gone. I cannot even seem to surrender my obsessing, nor drive it away. Nor has anyone ever been able to take it away. Even God in his wisdom has not seen fit to intervene. I lived on borrowed time, and I feel I belong to AA. That I had no right to make this new bid for personal freedom. Feeling an ability to decide that conflict, I collapsed. In that same way about coming to New York, when here, I irresistibly was drawn there. When there, I soon must fly back here. The deadlock cannot continue so much longer without serious consequences. There has to be a decision, and I don't see how it can be the decision to stay on. We've given that one a year or two, and no one can stand forever the whipsaw of indecision. Boy, you know, he is a hurting cowboy. Go. Bobby's personal observations about Bill, he's tops in my book. There never was, there never will be, another Bill W. He is such a naive person that hasn't the slightest idea how truly great he is. It takes a Bill to turn on the lights, so to speak. Someday all of this early history will be written, I suppose, in Bill's biography, for I can see that coming, even if he can't. Bill has given up us his last 10 years without any thought of himself. This is Bobby in San Francisco, October of 1946. And this is an accompanying newspaper article, which is, again, Luella Parsons, if any of you remember her as a gossip columnist. When Bobby went to the West Coast one time in October, and this article here in our town is Margaret B., Secretary of the National Alcoholics Anonymous. She came to close a deal with Hal Wallace for putting Alcoholics Anonymous on the screen. Not a word of this is true. But the deal will not be actually closed until she approves the script. That isn't true. When one of our well-known agents offered $50,000 to buy it for Leo McCary, and later for Monogram, Mrs. B. replied, "We're not interested in money. We represent half the wealth of the country. We're just interested in helping people. The only reason for putting the story on the screen now is the belief that someone who is cursed with a craving for drink can be encouraged to overcome it." Not a single word of any of that is true. Okay, but nevertheless, when you put us in the newspaper sometime by people who don't know us or have their own agenda, this is what you end up with. Go. Now, this is just of interest for, you know, on the subject of sponsorship. When Bobby responded to requests of how to sponsor on January 11th in 1947, we do not have any material available on sponsorship here. However, both Akron and Cleveland groups put out such pamphlets. If you will write them, I'm sure you could get copies. And incidentally, you know, it is true, you know, Clarence Snyder and his pamphlet in 1944 and so forth. But I believe, the first sponsorship pamphlet that came out of the foundation, I think, dates from 1953. That version lasted 5 years. And then a early version of the sponsorship pamphlet, which remains to this day, came out in 1958 from the GSO. Go. AA's explosive growth, 1945 to 1949. Budget, 1945, $20,000. Budget for AA headquarters, almost four times larger. Employees at the headquarters in 1945. Bobby, the only AA. Employees at AA headquarters in 1949, 18 or 20. And by that time, three females worked for Bobby. Groups, 560. Groups in 1949, five times greater. Members, 1945, 1,400. Members, 1949, 73,000. Bobby did have an assistant, Charlotte, but it buried the two of them. Trying to keep up with this rapid growth when AA was growing by two-thirds every year. It was part of this monumental growth that took place after World War II. Go. Our general service center, the Alcoholic Foundation of yesterday, today, and tomorrow. Here come the winds of change. Here comes Bill starting the process of trying to make AA independent of the people that are at the GSO. He doesn't want any power avenues or any kind of groups that figure that they are somehow special or somehow entitled. So the vast and uncommon 9 years exciting experience reposes in our files, and the heads of two secretaries, because of their station at the heart of AA, they are bound to have a broader view than most of us. This strenuous experience has developed effective ways of handling the multitude of problems and situations. They have immense personal acquaintance that stretches all over the globe. With them, a crisis a day is routine. We are coming to see that a permanently successful operation will depend on the preservation of these accumulative spirits, experiences, and contacts. Go. AA leadership is becoming a rotating matter, and AA to function by fundamental principles. Times. This is Bill. These are both in the same grapevine, incidentally. Times have changed, as everyone knows, that this AA has since exceeded our wildest expectations. Speaking for Dr. Bob and myself, we feel that we Ulsters need not take the prominent roles we once did. That includes Bobby. AA leadership is becoming happily and healthily a rotating matter. Again, AA may be able to function upon the power of its own fundamental principles rather than upon the prestige or inspiration of a highly personalized leadership. Thus, the whole can become a transcending importance over any part. Continued unity and success can almost always depend upon God, as we understand him working vitally for thousands of hearts rather than a few. Bobby's observation, she's starting to see what's going to be happening here. But at the same time, she goes, Bill is struggling, and underneath all my agreement, I realize his wisdom. AAs must one day learn to operate without Bill, and he hopes to see that structure go into effect while he is around. He simply cannot answer every letter that comes in and usually tosses his mail to either Charlotte, which was Bobby's assistant, or me for answering. Bill is spending all his time in writing and on working out the traditions. Incidentally, the traditions will be the subject of his talks. Go. Okay. And this is the letter from Tom Yahtzee, the fellow that wrote the preamble originally. And this is a letter that was actually written to Bill, but it was also, Bobby was copied on this. But this is again Tom Yahtzee. Making careers out of AA can be dangerous for both the individuals and AA. I know that you have sought through your recognized plans to prevent the development of a bureaucracy in AA and the creation of positions of personal power. I also think that more widely the policies of anonymity in the office, rotation of office, principal over person, and service over career can be applied to all AA activities. The safer future of the movement will be. What am I doing here for time? Well, excuse me, I'm running a bit long, but I'll try to wrap this up as fast as I can. Bill's 1948 Christmas message, and again, all I'll have time for is look at the cup. Again, the trust, the company that she keeps, the trustees, the grapeviners, Dr. Bob, Ann, Bobby, Lois, and I wish you the happiest of New Year's. That is, again, the level of the company she keeps go. And I heard workaholic. I found that according to the Oxford English Dictionary, the term workaholic first appeared in Canada as a satirical reference in April 5 of 1947 in the Toronto Daily Star. If you are cursed with an unconquerable craving for work, call Workaholic Synonymous, and a reformed worker will aid you back to happy idleness. Okay, but Bobby at the same time is in a position where I cannot leave the office for any length of time. And it follows, if I do accept one invitation, I must accept many. Bill had the same problem. So here she is, and she is bringing her dictating machine home. My heavens, would I love to find a wire recording, as they found, of Dr. Bob and Ann. I have hopes for that someday somebody will do that, because we have no recordings of her at all. It is, again, that I believe that that Bobby got wind of the term workaholic go. And when she did, this poem is dated June 10th of 1949. And it's the last thing that she wrote while she was national secretary. If you see a tall fellow ahead of a crowd, a leader of them in, marching fearless and proud, and you know of a tale whose more telling aloud would mean that his head must be in anguish be bound, it's a pretty good plan to forget it. If you know of a thing that will darken the joy of a man or a woman, a girl or a boy, that will wipe out a smile or the least way annoy, or cause any gladness or brightness to cloy, it's a pretty good plan to forget it. I presume she wrote it. I don't know that for a fact. Go. Bobby made amends for her resignation without notice. She resigned on June 13th, 1949. She had likely relapsed previously. She even later wanted to learn why she drank. In this letter to Leonard Harrison, dated June 27th of 1949, no one could be more grateful than I to be here with Dr. Thibault. I hoped and often prayed to hang on until August and a vacation, but that would have been only temporary solution to something which has been fundamentally wrong with me for years, probably long before I found AA. The compulsive, frantic activity, which I misnamed necessity, turned me into a machine which could not stop until it broke down in every way. No one ever made me or even asked me to work as I did. I just couldn't help it, and I didn't know why. Out of this chaos will something become better than I have ever known, and perhaps someday I can be truly useful, maybe for the first time in my life. And, of course, that is, she has been tremendously useful, but that's what depression and isolation can do to people. Go. The AA service manual combined with the 12 concepts of world service, and this is an interesting, I'm just going to, there's an issue, I guess, in front of the delegates in terms of whether or not they're anything that Bill ever wrote, for good or for ill, whether or not it should be just simply left alone, or some people wish to change that. But in Concept 11 on rotation that he wrote in 1962, he makes a fact that Bobby's, he makes a claim that Bobby's sudden resignation from the Alcoholic Foundation cost AA $50,000 in contributions. I do not believe that, but I do believe it is Bill having a way of using an event to make a to communicate the consequences of failure of rotation, and he would be more than capable of doing that. I went through the finances from 48 to 52. And there's no evidence that I can see that Bobby ever did any such thing. So, and it's of interest that whether or not, whether or not that remains, I hope some group conscious makes a good decision about whether the outcome of that is. Go. Now, Bobby leads, and here's accolades from around the world, and I always get choked up when I do this. How many times have I found muttering the very words you have said to me, what a solace and help they have been coming from India, that we no longer struggling is a very great part to your help and encouragement from your letters of advice, Ireland. The work you have done for AAs in the States abroad will go on now, AAs remembering always with the deepest gratitude of how much they owe you. That's Australia. Your love for AA has paved every thought and action with inspiration and encouragement for the sick alcoholic, Massachusetts. You have our love, our devotion, and our blessings. We will be with you always right to the very end. May God spare and keep you, Michigan. I just can't imagine, though, how much it will be without you steering things. Glad I'm not there. I'd miss you too much. Take it easy, my dear, and always remember you have a place of hearts of many that no else can ever fill, and that is just a sample of the mail that she received after she resigned. Go. And incidentally, the handbook for the secretary, which I believe she had a great deal to do with, it finally emerged on September 9, 1949, but it was released by people that replaced her, but they were no longer called national secretaries. They were called senior general secretary. So the title of national secretary became obsolete, and we don't know, but she was always talking about something like this being presented, and this was finally the outcome about 3 months after she left. Go. Bobby's amends to Bill and Lois. I understand that you are still feeling badly. I am sorry more than I can tell you, and so I wish I might find a way out of your darkness. I think you often pray for you much. It is so much easier to pray for others than for one's own self. Have you ever been able to understand how much I wish I could have avoided the pain caused you and Lois? It is beginning to come to me that these things cannot be explained in words, but are only felt through understanding. Because of my illness and the so little I now know of it, a small bit of the suffering you have gone through is clear to me. About 8 years ago, you opened the door to 30 Vesey Street, and in so doing, you gave me what might have been a useful life. Along the way, I took a detour and I lost myself. I hope one day I can earn the right to do something that you will feel in your faith in me was not completely mistaken. But Bill's reply to that letter, you said you felt sorry you had caused Lois and me disturbance, so as I'm concerned, that will be quite the other way around. I cannot doubt that my own obstinate, yes, downright willful illness hung like a millstone around your neck. God knows how long I've been learning, too, that self-condemnation, which Bobby had just done, leads so subtly, but oh, so surely, to the condemnation of others. I will often wish the word blame could be taken out of feeling and speech forever. I have always looked up to you, your illness notwithstanding, as a person of marvelous inner integrity, something far more basic than I ever had. I want you to know how much I appreciate this great gift of yours, how you went all out to share it with me. And this is followed up by the Christmas letter. Christmas makes me want to say some things, not new things, just old ones that you must never forget. I want you to remember, since I am the only one who can have any real idea of what your labor for AA meant to its infancy, just how much I appreciate the love for you and that. There is your capacity for devotion, of which Lois and I, so many, have been continuous receivers for years, though in my case your unanswering loyalty was so often undeserved. Also believe that the pain can be and usually is the price of the touchstone of progress. Anybody remember those words in the 12 and 12? Okay, but it's hard to cling to that fact when suffering is intense and you feel none. I now understand what must have been your feelings as you helplessly had to watch me stuck in the murk. If only neurosis could be more enjoyable. Go. Here are the two letters. Again, they're on yellow pads. But the way I copied them, they turn out to be black. And that is simply Bill doing this personally. Nobody else was going to see these, and nobody saw these for 70 years. Go. Bobby had a brief career in Hollywood. This is a Kroeger Babb movie. In other words, she was just a technical advisor for AA. She also was an advisor for the Hal Wallace movie Come Back, Little Sheba, in which starred Burt Lancaster and earned an Oscar for Shirley Booth. Go. And Bobby's visit to Akron for Dr. Bob's funeral, late November 1950, she is the fourth person to sign that 29-page guest book. And for some reason or another, unknown to me, she is now B-O-B-B-E Burger. But she changed that. I have no idea why. Go. Bill's letter to Bobby in Christmas 1950, never has there been a Christmas where old friends were such a cause for gratitude, and none do I owe more than you those days when we were together, when we helped fashion the shape of things to come or set down in my book of never to be forgotten. The endless thanks to you, dear Bobby, should 1951 bring any cloud, may it be soon to be dispelled, and may I help you do that for now. Merry Christmas, partner. Bobby dancing with her daughter-in-law, Sybil's wedding, and son-in-law, and Robert Edwards, June 28th of 1952. Then immediately afterwards, this is a study that I've just recently completed in the last couple of months, her 99-page dream diary. Literally, the woman could not go to sleep. If she dreamed anything, it was just a variety of nightmares. If she had any pleasant dreams, she didn't write them down. Drinking or drinking accusations were most often occurring. Her friend Charlotte was Bobby's only female friend. No evidence of her Charlotte, though, being in Bobby's life for real after 1949. There were dreams about Bill Wilson. There's no question that she loved Bill, and both of Bobby's daughters insisted that was the case, but I believe that is to be an honorable verb. Her parents and daughters were often subjects. Dr. Tebow was in 20 dreams. This is characteristic of a blackout drinker, as far as I'm concerned. 16 dreams of unknown men. Sometimes she was engaged, sometimes married, sometimes abused. Suggests a blackout drinker. And often dreams of men she met while she was on tour in their dancing career go. And she died on February 17th, 1953, by a bland suicide at the age of 49, 24 years after the death of her husband, Norman, almost to the day. Family shame led to a lie. The cause of death was reported to be chronic cardiovascular disease. She wanted no funeral. Bobby's last words, she wrote it in a note that was found by the bed. "Darling, I love you. Please forgive me. I've got to do this. Tell Lauren when she grows." That was her first grandchild. And incidentally, a supporter of this project to this day. Lauren, when she grows up, that I love her, but I can't face her. No record that she ever had a sponsor. Bill was probably, but that's as close. Marty Mann was a sponsor, but there's no mention of Bill being the sponsor as such. No record of her attending regular meetings in New York once she became national secretary. AA became a job. Her compulsive pursuit of that job became obsessive, and without the job, she lost her identity and felt ashamed. She drank in 1949 and at least in 1951 at least, but did have periods of sobriety. Attended AA meetings in California, not a partner, not a dancer, not a national secretary. The role was eliminated by the principles of rotation and anonymity. Succeeded by two senior general secretaries. Bobby had three people work for her. They actually had two of the general secretaries and four people, so six people replaced four. Go. Which we did this one. This is actually her death certificate, and I don't know if you can see it, but the death certificate, which is on the right about two-thirds of the way down, you can see the death certificate is a phony baloney, died of chronic cardiovascular disease. It was a planned suicide. Papers were left in a safety deposit box expressing her wishes and so forth. There's no question that it was a suicide. Go. Bill's 1953 AA Grapevine tribute. Margaret B., affectionately known as throughout as Bobby, passed away in her sleep on January 17th of an unforeseen heart ailment. That's not Bill's fault that he was misinformed. She headed our general service office in New York in all the years of AA's adolescence. Across her desk came thousands of pleas for help for individuals and hundreds from anxious groups who wanted to be advised of the latest AA experience in meeting problems that assailed them. It was out of this experience that AA's traditions were formed. And upon her tradition of devoted labor set a mark which will endure so long as God will have our society last. Her pioneering work has proven an inspiring precedent for every intergroup and foundation secretary, and her departure creates in the heart of each of her friends a void which can only be filled by the memory of what she left us and the assurance that her destiny is happy and secure. Now, this is true Bill. This is as fine a writing of Bill as I have ever encountered. It really reveals to me what a passionate and caring man he really was. March 30, 1950, this is written to Bobby's surviving daughter, Gloria. This is to tell you how deeply I share the loss of your good mommy with you. And I also write to offer you every reassurance and possible help that I can. My first recollection is that of the tremendous debt of gratitude we all owe her. I think of the thousands she helped and the many who will never realize the unfailing devotion and love that she gave them. There will be times her magnificent spirit and her love for us all. This we are bound to appreciate more and more as time passes. And I know this will be as true for me as it is for you. And my great regret will be that I failed to return in kind all that she gave me, that she never seemed to receive from life all that she put into it. Yet I am sure you must share with me the comforting thought that her new life, a little way out of our sight in healing, has only begun, and that it surely must be filled with a bright promise, for no one that I have ever known could be more deserving. If at any time you feel the need of anything that I can do for you, please call upon me instantly. Thus, I shall be able to show the affection I have for you and your mother and for you devotedly, Bill. A possible conclusion. Bobby's suicide note stated, "I've got to do this." Robert Thompson, in his biography, and Bill wrote in 1975, the man, Bill W., became their spiritual mentor. It seemed inconceivable that their Bill, who'd been released from his obsession, had not by the same means been freed from every other difficulty and defeat. They simply did not want to believe that this man could occasionally be crippled by depressions. Had Bobby lived and shared what she knew about Bill She could have seriously damaged Bill's reputation, which would have undermined the guidance and harmed Alcoholics Anonymous. She thanklessly protected and guarded Bill of all her years as National Secretary. Why did we not get to know her? Why was she all but forgotten by the vast majority of the fellowship? We're storytellers. She couldn't tell her story. She was tortured by loneliness.